Well, for those who were able to attend the majority of the meeting last week, that was a treat. Andy is such a great speaker, so sincere, thoughtful, and just a good student. And we had him over for dinner on Wednesday, and we were talking about it, and he said that the types of meetings that he just did for us are the hardest that he does, because they're not your typical sermons, where you're studying through. And they make him the most nervous. And I told him, hey, you couldn't tell. You did a great job. So if you haven't had a chance to hear all of those, I'd encourage you to go to the website and listen to those again. One thing I want to make sure that we say about the series is this. Every Christian that attended those lessons should walk away with a better understanding of what God's grace looks like. And what God's grace requires out of us in response. All of us should have that knowledge now. But more than that, the goal of the series was for all of us as Christians to understand how easy it is to open up a book of the Bible and help answer people's questions with it. Because that's what he was doing. He explained, I use 1 Peter to help people that I study with understand grace better. And this is how I do it on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So the next time you're having a conversation with somebody about grace, and you're not quite seeing eye to eye, go to 1 Peter. And I hope that gives us a little bit more confidence as we have those conversations with people. There was a passage that was in 1 Peter that I'd like to read, just a couple of verses. 1 Peter chapter 1, Andy read it, I believe it was Sunday during the sermon period in the morning, where Peter says this about salvation. 1 Peter 1, verses 10 and 11. Concerning this salvation, the prophets who prophesied about the grace that was to be yours searched and inquired diligently, inquiring what person or time the Spirit of Christ in them was indicating when he predicted the sufferings of Christ in the subsequent glories. And that passage just really stood out to me as I was getting ready for some studies this week. And Andy did a good job connecting to some Old Testament prophecies to help illustrate this point. But I'd like to do that a little bit more this morning. What I'd like to do is I'd like to go back in our Old Testaments and to look at a chapter of one of the prophets and see how this actually plays out. So let's open our Old Testaments to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. Most folks, especially in our younger classes, when we study Daniel, we stop at chapter 6. Yet most people don't go beyond that because you get into chapter 7 through 12 and you start to get into these very figurative visions, and they get harder as you go. And so most people, for the sake of simplicity for our kids, they just go through 1 through 6. But chapter 7, it starts that interesting break for a couple of reasons. One, because of the visions, but two, because of who's having them. Up to this point in Daniel, Daniel has been interpreting the visions of the kings. He's been interpreting Nebuchadnezzar's visions. He's been trying to explain to Belshazzar the handwriting on the wall. He's trying to help Darius in chapter 6 understand that God is still God Most High and can deliver him. But you get to chapter 7, and for the rest of the book, there are messages that are given to Daniel. He's the one who's asleep. He's the one who sees something. And so the book shifts. And think about that just for a second. Up to this point, the first six chapters, God has been trying to say something to the Babylonian Empire and the Persian Empire. All of these people, he's trying to say, I am God Most High. But now in 7 through 12, he's speaking to Daniel, who's going to communicate the rest of this book to Israel. And so his audience has shifted. He has something that he wants to say to his people, and so he does it through Daniel. Something else to notice before we get into the chapter is in verse 1, it explains that this took place in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Chapter 7 is not chronological. It doesn't go chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and march down through history. Chapter 7 actually takes place between chapters 4 and 5. Chapter 8 also takes place between chapters 4 and 5. And so there's some information that we know that Daniel hasn't experienced yet. In chapter 7, he has not experienced the handwriting on the wall. In chapter 7, he has not been thrown into the lion's den yet. He hasn't had those experiences. Now, he's an older man. He's probably in his late 50s, early 60s. He's lived through most of the book so far. But we need to understand where he is. There's some things regarding God and his time in captivity that he's not yet experienced. The most important thing that he has not yet experienced is he has not yet experienced the captivity ending. You know, the book starts with Daniel as a young man being taken from Jerusalem and taken to Babylon. And in his head, he knows what the prophets have said. He knows that they've said 70 years in captivity. And I don't know if he lived in the same room his entire life while he was there in captivity or different places, but if he kept a tally somewhere, you know, year one, year two, year three, year four, whoosh, there's five. One, two, I don't know. I'm sure he kept track somewhere. And chapter 7 takes place where he's about 56, 57 years into it. And you think about that in the scheme of things, 56 years out of 70, you're almost done. I mean, you go running on marathons and you start ticking off the miles. How many more miles do I have left to go? You know, you're in the gym and you're doing your repetitions. How many more do I have left to go? And in captivity, out of 70 years, you're almost done. And so you can anticipate, he's thinking, we're almost there. Just a little over a decade and we're done. But God is going to give him information in chapter 7 that changes that. The 70 years is fixed, but he's going to be communicating to him that there are some difficulties for the Israelites beyond the 70 years. That God's plan goes beyond that. He's going to broaden Daniel's perspective. And that happens here in this chapter. So let's start reading through paragraph at a time. And when we get to the end of the chapter, there are about 5 points I'd like to make about Daniel. Starting in verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. Daniel declared, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of a man was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, Arise, devour much flesh. After this I looked, and behold, another like a leopard with 4 wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which 3 of the 1st horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Can you imagine being asleep and that coming to you? And we're not done. And there's something that we should point out as we start to get into this section of Daniel. And that should be our approach to apocalyptic, what's called apocalyptic or revelatory visions. Like what you would read in Revelation or what you would read in Ezekiel or what you would read in Jeremiah. A lot of the same language. Let's quickly talk about an approach. The first approach you can see from the text itself. Look at verse 2. Daniel declares, I saw. And then about halfway through verse 4, then as I looked. Verse 6, after this I looked. Verse 7, after this I saw. Verse 9, I looked. Verse 11, I looked. Verse 13, I looked. Verse 21, I looked. What's the point? Daniel saw something in his mind's eye. And it was a picture. It was a scene. It was something that was moving and changing. And if we want to get the impression that God wants us to get, then we want to try to see what he saw. We want to try to imagine what he imagined. Someone said that pictures are windows to better understanding. That's pretty cool. Pictures are windows to better understanding. And God is sending pictures to Daniel to communicate some things. Now, to see what Daniel saw, we need to do something else. And we can just do it in this room. I mean, we have opposite views of the room. But if I were to ask you to describe what you see, you would start to rattle off a couple of different things. You would say, well, I see a blacked out screen. I see a podium. I see a bald preacher. I see yellow arrangements on either side of him. I see a stage elevated. You would start to describe the scene in general, right? And I would describe, you know, I'm in a building, I'm in a room, large auditorium, four rows, four columns of seats, all these people sitting there, stained glass on either side. I would try to describe the room, lights coming down from the ceiling, carpet on the floor. I would describe the room. And as I try to describe the room, then you would get to the impression, how do I feel in the space? How does it make me feel? And as I do that, no one would stop. I would not stop you and say, why are the flowers yellow? That's not the point. I'm just trying to create the scene. I'm just trying to communicate the scene. And this is the point. As we look at apocalyptic visions and literature, we're trying to get a sense of the total picture before we get so focused on a detail that we miss the point of the picture. Some of the details are explained for us, even in the vision. In just a few verses, an angel is going to explain what these beasts are. Really easy. So I don't want to get so focused on a detail that I miss the point of the picture. So we're trying to see what Daniel saw, and we want to see the total picture. So when we go back to verses 1 through 8, what did he see? And what he saw was an ocean. A large ocean, not a lake. I mean, the way that I picture this is he's looking out beyond the horizon and he does not see land. He's looking out and all he sees is water. And what he sees is he sees the water, this ocean, getting churned up by the wind, which would be terrifying. And as the water is churned up, animals start coming out. Four of them, one after the other. And they're not the size of a Dalmatian. I mean, they're coming up out of an ocean. These are large, abnormally large beasts. And they're not normal beasts. And what he sees terrifies him and troubles him. And so you start picturing the stormy sea, you start picturing these beasts, and then we start describing the beasts. The first beast is like a lion with eagle's wings, but as he watches, the wings get removed and the beast stands up like a man and is given intelligence like a man. So all of a sudden he goes from being just this abnormal beast to a man-like intelligent abnormal beast. And then you get a second one. You see a bear. It was raised up on one side, and I like that it says it was like a bear, it was like a lion. These are not literal animals, they're figurative. But he sees this bear, and it's a lopsided bear. I was teaching this recently, and I asked somebody, you know, what do you think it would have looked like? Back when Arnold Schwarzenegger was scrawny little Arnie, and he was starting to go to the gym and to work out, but he told his personal trainer, I love my right side. Who cares about the left side? I'm just going to work out my right side. It's my best side. And all he ever did was work out his right side. When he went to show off for Mr. Universe, how do you think that would have looked? Really awkward. As he bulks up over here and turns around, you see this scrawny little... And that's the picture. You've got this lopsided bear that's got a strong side and a weak side. And it's told that it's allowed to devour. And a leopard jumps out, this super fast animal, and it's like given turbo jets. It's given four wings, so it's even faster than a normal leopard. And on top of that, it's got four heads. So it's super fast, but it has these four heads, and it says dominion is given to it. And then finally, in verses 7 and 8, this fourth beast comes out, and we're not even told what kind of animal it looks like. It's just a beast. But it's different. At the end of verse 7, it says it was different from all the other beasts. That phrase is used three times total in the chapter. Verse 19, it was different. Verse 23, this shall be different. It's terrifying. It's dreadful, super strong, iron teeth. We're given the extra detail of bronze claws later in the chapter. And it's devouring and stamping in pieces. And that's not the oddest thing. It's got 10 horns. And then as he's watching, what he sees is he sees three horns pop out and a little one spring up. And that little one is given a mouth. And it's given eyes. And it starts talking. And I'm pretty sure, like, as he heard that voice of that horn, it wasn't some high-pitched squeaky, "Hey, guys!" Like, I'm pretty sure that was not it. You've got an abnormally large beast, and what I imagine hearing is this deep bass voice. And it starts boasting against God. Now, if you go to verse 17, later on, Daniel's told these four great beasts are four kings or four kingdoms that shall arise out of the earth. This vision is almost identical to Nebuchadnezzar's vision back in chapter 2, where he saw the statue of four different types of metal. And they were the four kingdoms. So you had Babylon and Medo-Persia and Greece and Rome. And then at the end of the thing, he sees a stone come down a hill and knock the whole thing over. And that stone, cut without hands, becomes a kingdom that fills the whole earth. Very similar. And I think you've got the four same kingdoms as we get down to it. There are some details added here. Daniel gets more information than what Nebuchadnezzar was given. And so if you follow that, this first kingdom, this lion, would be the Babylonian kingdom. And remember, Babylon hasn't fallen yet. We've got 13 years before that happens. So you've got Babylon, and the bear would be the Medo-Persian, and the really fast leopard with four heads would be Greece, and then this abominable beast in 7 and 8 would be Rome. We know that. Daniel doesn't know that yet. So let's keep going with his vision. Verses 7 through 10, as I looked, so he sees this, as I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out from before him. 1,000 thousands served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. What does he see? He goes into this poetic section where, in parallels, God is described. He sees a courtroom getting set up, a royal courtroom. And he sees God take his seat. And what kind of picture do you have of that as you imagine that? What does God look like? Just look at his name. The Ancient of Days. The idea is he's ageless. He's eternal. Look at his clothing. It's white as snow, the hair of his head like pure wool. Purity. He's ageless and pure. It's kind of the picture, when you read your New Testament, it's kind of the picture you get of Jesus in Revelation 1. A little bit. You see some of the same language. But then you see this ageless, totally pure being sit down on his throne. And what does his throne look like? and it's lit on fire. Fiery flames, its wheels were burning fire, kind of like what Ezekiel saw in Ezekiel 1. And as he sits down, fire goes out from him, and it's the idea of God is rendering judgment. And so when you read verses 11 and 12, we're not surprised when Daniel looks, and because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking, and as I looked, the beast was killed, and its body destroyed and given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Let's talk about verse 11 for a second. What does he see? This boastful horn grabs his attention. So, there's a show that I stopped watching years ago because I could not stand the main guy. It's on the cooking channel. There's this guy who is showcasing his bakery, but I could not stand it because he was so stinking arrogant. He was always the greatest. I'm just, you know, I'm amazing and I'm wonderful and, you know, my shop is the best. Every show, his shop was the best. And not only was he arrogant, I mean, it just kind of goes along with being arrogant, flies off the handle at people. Like, you don't do this, blah, 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 I fire you, I'm going to hire you. Seasons. They gave that guy seasons. And I had to stop. Like, at first I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Look at what they're making. But his brash bravado, it was just, I couldn't handle it. I wanted to see the show where, like, God smote his cake into a molten mess, and God never did it. Right? Horrible show. And now he's got another show. But imagine a guy like that, bragging and boasting and blah, 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 and in the middle of it, God gets him. Like he's in the middle of a sentence, and he's just down. Because that's what verse 11 is. Daniel hears this horn boasting and boasting, and so he turns to look, and in the middle of this horn's boasting, just done. God judges him. And then in verse 12, it's explained that these beasts, even though their power is reduced, they still kind of limp along as like shadows of their former selves for a period of time. Let's think about that just for a second. We already know that they're kingdoms because we looked at verse 17. We already know which kingdoms they are because it parallels chapter 2. We already know that this big one with all the boasting is Rome. We already know all of that. Okay. Did God judge those four kingdoms? Yes. But are there still kingdoms today? Yes. Are there still governments today? Yes. Are there still politicians today? Yes. Are they anything what that used to be? No. They're not. Because of verses 13 and 14. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man, and he came to the Ancient of Days, and was presented before him, and to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. Who is the Son of Man? And what is his kingdom? And when did he get it? During the days of this fourth beast. And as you read through the Gospels, the phrase Son of Man is a title that's used to describe Jesus. It's like more than a dozen times in the Gospel of Mark alone, Jesus is referred to as the Son of Man. And when do we read about Jesus being presented before God and God giving Jesus authority and a kingdom? When do we read about that? We read about that after his ascension. After his ascension, Jesus receives authority and a kingdom. Let's think about this for just a second. You remember Matthew 28 and the Great Commission? Do you remember why Jesus was able to give the Great Commission? Because Jesus refers to Daniel chapter 7 and verse 13. Jesus came and said to them, what? All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. That's Daniel 7, 13 through 14. It's been fulfilled. He has citizens. Because of that, go therefore and make disciples of who? All nations. Which is what was said would happen in Daniel 7:14. Baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. Why is he able to command it? Because all authority has been given to him. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. Which is another way of saying, his dominion shall be an everlasting dominion. Right? Jesus is referencing this prophecy from Daniel chapter 7. And this is one of the points that I want to make. Someone was asking, what's the point of Daniel? The point of Daniel is a book. When you look at the theme, and you look at the verses, the phrases that are repeated through it, the main point of Daniel is that God is sovereign. God is in control, and God is powerful. That's true. But the prophetic point of Daniel is that sovereign God is going to anoint a king and a kingdom. That sovereign God is going to put someone on his throne, and that person is Jesus. If we get through Daniel and we don't see Jesus, we've missed the point of Daniel. Because that's what Daniel would have woken up at the end going, who is that? Who is this Son of Man? Who is the Ancient of Days going to crown? When is that going to happen? Isn't that what 1 Peter was saying? As he longs to figure out who this person is? Let me read just a couple of New Testament passages to reinforce that this is Jesus here. In 1 Peter 3:22, it says that Jesus has gone into heaven and is at the right hand of God with angels, authorities, and powers having been subjected to him. Philippians 2:9, therefore God has highly exalted on him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name. And then probably my favorite, John chapter 5 and verse 27. He has given him authority to execute judgment because he is the Son of Man. It's Jesus. It's Jesus. Well, let's get back to the chapter. How did he respond to all of that? He sees this stormy sea and these incredible beasts jump out, and he sees a righteous God sit on his throne and issue judging fire and consume and burn up one of the beasts. And then he sees this person walk up to that throne and be given a kingdom. That's what he sees. And so in verse 15, as for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious and the visions of my head alarmed me. You think? Like, I'd be scared. I'd be trying to wake myself up to figure out if this was real or not. Instead, in verse 16, I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of the things. These four great beasts are four kings who shall arise out of the earth, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. And then he stops. So, Daniel sees other things that he hasn't explained yet. There are beings that he hasn't explained, and he just says, so I approached one of those who happened to be standing there, and I asked that person. This is the first time in the book that he's asking for help. Normally, people are asking Daniel for help. Here's Daniel asking for help. I don't get it. And the only answer, he spent 14 long verses describing what he saw, and how long is the answer that he gets? Two sentences. The angel says, look, we can explain this. This is like Cliff Notes version answer. The four beasts are four kings and they're going to show up out of the earth. Answer number one. Answer number two, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. But let's just talk about the simple answer for a second. That's all he needed to know. All he needed to know was there's a sequence of kingdoms and world powers that are going to show up. That's going to happen. But But he already knew that from Daniel chapter 2. And even though it's going to get hard, you look at the second answer. The second answer is God's people, the saints, win. The kingdom that they get lasts for forever. That's all he needed to know. You know, when people try to talk about what is Revelation about? What is Revelation about? It's so many different things and it's so confusing. No, it's not. It's the same thing. You boil Revelation down, and what did Jesus say through John to those first century saints that were going through persecution? Endure, because God's people win. Because their king has won. That's Revelation. Now, that's not enough for Daniel. Because Daniel says, wait! Verse 19. Then I desired to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the rest, exceedingly terrifying. Teeth of iron, claws of bronze, which devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet, and about the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn that came up, and before which 3 of them fell, the horn that had eyes and a mouth and spoke great things, and that seemed greater than its companions. As I looked, this horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given for the saints of the Most High, and the time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. So 19 through 22 is Daniel saying, hey, I want to know more about this. I don't get this. What is this horn? What's going on? So the angel gives him a little bit more information. He said, as for the fourth beast, there shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the kingdoms. It shall devour the whole earth and trample it down and break its pieces. He said, it's going to happen. He's saying it's certain. This kingdom is going to show up and it is going to do what you saw. Verse 24, as for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings shall arise. Another shall arise after them, and he shall be different from the former ones. He shall put down 3 kings. He shall speak words, boastful words, against the Most High. He shall wear out the saints of the Most High. He shall think to change the times and the law. And they shall be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. For a limited period of time, he's going to be allowed to do what he wants to do. But, in verse 26, but the court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion shall be taken away, to be consumed and destroyed to the end. And the kingdom, and the dominion, and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. Their kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey them. So the angel explains. It is going to be bad. And those 10 horns, those represent kings. And one is going to show up, and he's going to be really bad. And he is not going to like God's people. And he's going to make it harder for a while. But it's okay, because there's an everlasting. When everything and everyone is going to acknowledge God. And so in verse 28, here's the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly alarmed me and my color changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. We'll talk about that phrase in just a second. That's an intense dream. And at first blush, it might not seem like a very encouraging interpretation. Because at the end of it, Daniel is even more distressed than before. But I think part of that is explained by, he thought 70 years of captivity and we were done. And now God's saying, no, my plan goes beyond that. My purpose goes beyond that. And there's this great thing and this great person and this great kingdom out here. And Daniel's trying to figure out who is and what is that? What is that? So, first things first. What's the point of the chapter? What's the point of this vision? The first is this. Every earthly kingdom and politician is temporary. Okay? Guess what? Every government, including ours, in the grand scheme of eternity, is temporary. Temporary. There is no politician who is the answer to the world. There are varying degrees of what, however you want to qualify them. But they're temporary. But there's a kingdom, according to this chapter, that is eternal. believers and saints need to be prepared that there will be governments that are hostile and not friendly toward them. I think Andy did a good job with that when he was talking about 1 Peter chapter 3 and 4 and submitting to those kind of governments. What's another point from the focus of the chapter? That God's people win. God's people win. Those who are believers in God and who belong to that kingdom, they win. And remember that all of this is pointing toward the kingdom of Jesus. We need to understand that we need to submit to the authority and the reign of Jesus. But then let's ask something else. And then the lesson will be yours. What can we learn about Daniel learning hard things? Because this was hard. Not everything that we study is easy. There's some things that are hard. And I think as you go through the chapter and you look at the verbs that describe Daniel's activity, we can learn some things about learning hard things. Go back to verses 1 and 2. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and he told the sum of the matter. And then Daniel declared, "I saw." What verses 1 and 2 explain is that Daniel honestly declared the vision. He gave you all the details that he had, and he proclaimed it. And I would say he did it at the right time, because at the end of the chapter you realize he kept it to himself for a period of time. Daniel honestly declared the vision at the right time. It's hard to say hard things. It's hard. But if we're going to be faithful to God and faithful to what God has said, we'll do it. We'll honestly declare what God has to say about something. Go down to verse 8. In the middle of the vision, as it's coming, he stops and he's like, "What? What is that?" As the horns start confusing him, verse 8 says, I considered the horns. The second thing that Daniel did is he thoughtfully evaluated what he was learning. He thoughtfully evaluated what he was seeing and he was trying to make sense of it. So he honestly declared the vision. He thoughtfully considered what he was learning. And then in verse 16, I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all this. And then in verse 19, then I desired to know the truth. Daniel gets to the point where he's not able to do it on his own. So what he does is he diligently seeks help. He diligently seeks help and he diligently seeks truth. I want to know what this is and I don't want anyone to lie to me. I want to know what is this. That's a humbling thing. For a guy of Daniel's stature and age and experience to be able to say, I don't get it, but I need help. But he was willing to do it. Look at verse 15. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. Skip to verse 28. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly alarmed me, and my color changed. It would be easy, considering who Daniel was and what time of life he was in, where he would try to put on a show. I mean, I'm Daniel. I'm the guy who interpreted this and interpreted that, and I'm the guy who's been faithful to Nebuchadnezzar, and I'm way up here, and I'm at the top of the food chain and all of this, and so I've got it. And he puts on this brave face. That's not what he does. According to 15 and 28, he was emotionally transparent. This was scary. And it was hard. It made him go pasty white. And he had trouble sleeping. So Daniel was emotionally transparent as he worked through all of this. And then verse 28 in that final phrase, I kept the matter in my heart. If you do a comparison between about 7 or 8 different Bible versions, that phrase is translated 2 different ways, and it's kind of split between the 8. So the ESV, which is I'm reading from, the ESV, King James, New King James, and the Lexham Bible all say, I kept the matter in my heart. It makes you think about the mother of Jesus, Mary, as she learned things about Jesus, and it says that she stored that information up in her heart. The other versions, the New Living Translation, NIV, New American Standard, say, I kept the matter to myself. I think it's the same thing. The gist is the same thing. For a period of time, he did not share it. Why did he do that? Because we know he did. I mean, we're reading it, and back in the first two verses, he wrote it down and eventually shared it. But for a period of time, he did not. Why? I would suggest that what Daniel did here in verse 28 was, he was showing consideration. He was showing consideration. He had been given information that he didn't even know what to do with. That in his 60s, as a firm believer in God, rocked him. And he had not yet witnessed Babylon fall and the beginning of those visions start to be fulfilled. He hadn't witnessed it yet. And so I think in his wisdom and in his compassion for other people, he waited until it was most helpful to share it. He was considerate. You know, we do that as adults. We do that as adults, where there's information that we've got that our kids just don't need to work through yet. And at the right time and in the right way, we'll share it with them. But until then, it's not theirs to carry. It would actually be detrimental. And then there's some parents, well, I tell my kids everything. Well, you shouldn't. I mean, you should not. You're putting adult things on someone who is not an adult, and they're not even in a position to do anything with it. But Daniel, in his wisdom and in his compassion, waited until the timing was right, which meant he carried it with God's help until the time was right. So I think what you see in chapter 7, as you look at Daniel work through all of this, as you see him honestly declare it, you see him thoughtfully consider it, you see him diligently seek for help and truth, he's emotionally transparent, and he was considerate with the information. We should do the same. As we're working through hard things, we should do the same. And as we come back to verses 13 through 14, we're on the other side of that. We've seen all of those kingdoms come and go. And one of the big differences between chapter 2 and chapter 7 is in chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar's vision of that ultimate kingdom was just this rock. It's just a rock. In chapter 7, it's a person. And the person is Jesus. Daniel was given more information. We live on the other side of that. It's been fulfilled. That's why Jesus was able to declare what he declared in Matthew chapter 28. We live on the other side of that. And so for those of us who are not yet disciples to this king, this Son of Man, to Jesus, we need to choose to become his disciple. We need to choose to become a citizen of his kingdom so that we can belong to the kingdom that will outlast every other kingdom. And for those of us who have already placed allegiance to him, those who have been baptized into Christ, no matter what we're going through, we need to be confident that in the end, God's people win. Even though there may be difficult things, God's people win. However you need to respond to Daniel chapter 7, if there's any way we can serve you, why don't you come to the front and let us know while we stand and while we sing.